Well, welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm Ray Bolin, your host for the day, and with me is Dr. Jonathan Wells, author of Icons of Evolution and its new sequel, Zombie Science. So welcome to ID the Future, Jonathan.
Pleasure to be here, Ray.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, when I first saw the title of this book, it certainly grabbed my attention. So give us initially just some idea about what do you mean about zombie science, what that's really trying to get at.
Well, zombie science, as I use the word, is basically materialistic philosophy masquerading as empirical science. That is, it's telling stories from a materialistic viewpoint, even though the evidence contradicts them. So it's not evidence-based. In fact, it's contrary to the evidence. Empirically, it's dead, but it keeps marching on, and that's why I call it zombie science.
So it keeps coming back to life somehow.
That's right.
Okay. Well, you begin your first chapter about Who Let the Zombies Out, and you start with a little story about the problem that we've had classifying whether we should or should not eat eggs. So just kind of run through that for us a little bit.
Sure. Well, back in the 60s, a couple of scientists decided that eggs are bad for us. One of them was exposed as having manipulated the data, doing something called cherry picking, where he just picked the data that he wanted and threw the rest away. Anyway, based on their work, in the 70s, a U.S. Senate committee endorsed the idea that eggs are bad for you, and so the government got behind the idea, and eggs were officially bad. So I ate them anyway.
Wait just a minute here, Jonathan. A Senate committee agreed that eggs were bad for you. That's just amazing to me. I mean, senators, yeah, nutrition is their thing, isn't it?
Well, the scientists told them, and they believed the scientists, and at the time it was the scientific consensus, they call it.
Ah, yes.
So they endorsed it.
So what happened? It seems that, and I'm familiar, that notion kind of came and went for a while. There's been several foods that have been on a list like that. So initially, eggs were pronounced to be not good for you and kind of stay away from them. That's probably why we still have, you can buy egg whites and things like that in store, no yolks to them. So how did that change around?
Well, further research showed in 2015 that eggs are not at all bad for you. They were declared bad because they contain cholesterol, which is true. But it turns out that the cholesterol you eat has very little effect on the cholesterol levels in your blood. There's different kinds of cholesterol, and the ratio of the different kinds in your blood is correlated with heart disease, but eggs are not. So in 2015, the U.S. government officially called off its war on eggs.
Well, it only took about, 40 years?
Let's see. That's, long time.
Okay. Well, yeah, those kind of things do tend to stick around. And I know butter has kind of been on and off the bad list for quite some time, but there's bound to be other things that will come in the future. But you tend to focus in your book now on some of the icons of evolution that you did mention in your previous book. And you kind of continued the story a little bit, but you've added a few more. And I'm looking at the table of contents, and your next chapter is just called The Tree of Life. So I think you talked about that the first time around. So what have you added to the discussion here?
Well,
just a brief overview.
To tie in with eggs, the point is that what the scientific consensus tells us actually often turns out to be wrong. And right now, the scientific consensus is that evolution is a fact. Evolution being the origin of new species, organs, and body plans by unguided processes. It's the scientific consensus. Well, I wrote about the icons of evolution because they actually provide evidence against the consensus, though the consensus continues to use them to indoctrinate students into evolution.
Okay.
So the first of these is the Tree of Life, the only illustration in Darwin's book, The Origin of Species. And it's supposed to show that all living things are modified descendants of one or a few common ancestors. And it's a very compelling image, but More and more we're learning the evidence does not fit it. It's not a tree. Some people think it's a bush. Some people think it's a lawn. But in any case, it's not a tree. And what happens is the tree gets imposed on the evidence, even when the evidence doesn't fit it.
So that's what we're going to see come up again and again in your book. Things that are thought about or presented as evidences for evolution, and a story is woven that is, at least to some degree, based upon actual evidence, but the story seems to go well beyond it, and then there seems to be other data that comes up which actually disproves the story, but the story hangs around. Is that the gist of zombie science?
That's right. That's what zombie science is. The materialistic story persists even when the evidence is stacked up against it. Now, the tree of life is materialistic in the sense that Darwin did not allow for any kind of acts of creation, miraculous interventions or additions. The whole history of life for Darwin had to be materialistic. And that's the point of the tree of life, and the evidence doesn't fit it.
Okay, so you have another section here called Survival of the Fakest. Okay, so what in the world is that about?
Well, the title is from a 2001 article in the American Spectator summarizing my book, Icons of Evolution. And so I go on and discuss the other icons. One is the famous 1953 Miller-Urey experiment, which supposedly showed how amino acids, the building blocks of life, could have formed on the early Earth. Well, not long after the experiment, scientists decided that the atmosphere on the early Earth was very different from the gases used in the Miller-Urey experiment, and then the experiment was basically irrelevant. And that's still the majority opinion. And again, we're talking consensus. It could be wrong. But the point is the textbooks continue to use the Miller-Urey experiment to convince students that scientists somehow understand the early steps in the origin of life. And the truth is far from that.
So in this chapter, you're basically just kind of reviewing some of those icons that you talked about in the previous book?
Yes. The other ones include Haeckel's embryos, which were faked or doctored drawings that supposedly show we evolved from fish. Peppered moss, which supposedly showed that natural selection changed population of moss in England from being mostly light-colored to mostly dark-colored. And it was illustrated with pictures of moths resting on light and dark tree trunks. Well, it turns out the pictures were faked in most cases. And the whole cause of the change was real, but the whole cause of it remains controversial. Darwin's finches are another icon. These are birds on the Galapagos Islands in the Pacific that students are told inspired Darwin to formulate his theory, which is totally false. Students are also told that the birds are an example of the origin of species by natural selection. Well, it turns out the evidence for that is pretty dicey, too. Other icons include a four-winged fruit fly. It's a mutant fly with an extra pair of wings, but the extra wings are effectively dead. The fly is seriously handicapped and would be an evolutionary dead end, not a step forward. So it's used to convince students that DNA mutations have the power to produce novelties in evolution, but it actually does nothing of the sort.
So here I presume in some of these other issues that you're bringing up from the previous book, are you updating some of the evidence for some of these?
I update the evidence, and I show that they're all still being used in some textbooks. Not just that, they're being promoted by the scientific establishment, that is the consensus that I was talking about a minute ago.
Ah.
So even though they were known to be false in 2000, and are known to be false now, they were and are still being used to indoctrinate students in evolution.
Well, you've got another chapter here that I'm really curious about because you title it simply DNA, the Secret of Life. Well, what could possibly be zombie science about DNA?
Well, DNA is real, of course, but the molecule has been invested with far more power than it actually has. Scientists have known for decades that DNA does not really run the show in living things. It serves as a template for the synthesis of some proteins and some RNAs, but there is much more information in living things than is contained in their DNA. And so DNA was called the secret of life by Francis Crick, who along with James Watson discovered the structure of it in 1953. But it's just another molecule. It's an important one, to be sure. We can't do without it. But there's so much more to life than DNA that's why I call it an icon of evolution. Now, the tie-in with evolution is that DNA mutations supposedly provide the raw materials for evolution, but they don't. DNA isn't that powerful. And the mutations, as the four-winged fruit fly illustrate, are harmful or neutral. If they're beneficial, they have such slight effects that they could not contribute to the origin of species, organs, and body plans.
Okay. Well, some of your other topics here we're going to cover in other podcasts. We've covered already once before, walking whales, which I really enjoy doing. And then, of course, the human appendix and other junk and the human eye and antibiotic resistance and cancer. And those are also additional sections of the book. But I want to talk a little bit about your last chapter. It just says zombie apocalypse. So what's that all about as we close up our time?
Well, zombie science in the form of evolution, materialistic evolution, has had a very corrosive effect on our society, on religion, on education, on science itself. And so the last chapter, Zombie Apocalypse, goes into those effects in some detail. This is after I spent the rest of the book showing that, in fact, materialistic evolution is not supported by the evidence. So this is materialistic stories affecting what our children are taught, what preachers are telling their congregations, and it even corrupts science itself.
Well, it would seem to me that a day of reckoning has to come eventually. And I'm curious, for our listeners, do you see any signs that that day of reckoning is actually approaching? Are things beginning to crumble? Can we begin to fully anticipate that change will come? The zombies will finally die off.
Well, if not die off, by the way, I don't call any real people zombies. I'm careful not to label anyone.
Well, I was referring to the ideas, yes.
Yes. So zombie science is an idea. And will it go away entirely? I doubt it. But my desire is to see it lose its control, its dominance over our science and our culture. And I do think that's going to happen. Here I would switch metaphors from zombie to vampires. Vampires can't stand the light. And I think what's happening is that more and more light is being shined on the things that zombie science claims. And it's even becoming clear among people who are committed to materialism that the evidence does not support evolutionary theory. And so I see it crumbling pretty much the way I would see ice on a nearby lake crumble in the spring back when I was a kid.
Dr. Wells, it's been great talking with you today. Again, I want to remind our listeners that his new book, Zombie Science, is coming out April 18th. So keep that date in mind, and I'm sure it's available for pre-order through various online sources. And again, this is Ray Boland for ID to Future with Jonathan Wells and Zombie Science coming out April 18th. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.